introducing our next guest, here is a bulletin from the Channel 5 newsroom. The Associated Press reports that the United States is on the point of deciding whether to send chartered civilian airplanes to Amman in the immediate future. The planes would be sent to evacuate possibly as many as 200 American citizens from war-torn Jordan. Informed sources say the decision is imminent, indicating that it will be reached by sometime tomorrow. Now, a week ago we had on Panorama one of the Nixon administration's most vocal critics, Senator Mark Hatfield from Oregon. And this year, this month, this week, right now, we're going to give the other side of the coin, and that is, if I can get to it, one of the administration's strongest supporters, Senator Robert Dole, Republican from Kansas. And welcome, Senator, to Panorama.
Thank you very much, John. Happy to be here.
I'm just curious, what does this... You were with, or were you, with the president? He met with a number of congressmen yesterday. Did this come up at all?
I wasn't with the president. He met with the leadership, and I'm not part of the leadership, but it was discussed yesterday, yes.
That's to be debated whether you're part of the leadership or not.
I was just going to say, right. In 18 months in the Senate, you have made your presence felt, perhaps as no other senator has. But how do you interpret that? Had there been talk in Congress?
There has been considerable discussion. How do we protect the lives of Americans? And, of course, there's a possibility that perhaps the airport is open at that point. We could go in and go out without difficulty. But I do believe that we're near a point of decision, as the bulletin suggests.
Well, that brings up the whole question of the Middle East. How do you feel about it?
Well, I feel, I believe, as most senators feel, it's a very, go back to the ceasefire that we hope might succeed with Israel and the Arab countries, particularly Egypt and Jordan. It's still very shaky. There's still some hope for it. I think Hussein can withstand the pressure and may succeed against the guerrillas. But, of course, the big question is, how should we become involved? We have 54 hostages there, including the pilot on the TWA plane, who happens to be a Kansan, one of my constituents, and we're directly interested. But in above and beyond that, there are some 400 other civilians there, Americans. We have a responsibility to protect these people. This goes back to the whole debate on the Church-Cooper resolution. What power does the president have to protect Americans? He not only has a power, he has an obligation to do this. And so this becomes involved again. But I don't find many of the critics speaking out. They're waiting for the president to make a mistake. And then whichever way he goes will be the wrong way, of course.
Who are they?
Well, I would guess McGovern has been quiet, and the hopefuls on the other side, by and large. There are many hopefuls on the other side. I've only met a few Democrats who aren't hopeful.
Were you personally surprised by the recent guerrilla activities, or did you see it as something inevitable?
No, neither. I really didn't expect it. I didn't anticipate it. But I did know, of course, they were strongly opposed to any ceasefire. I have been on the West Bank. I have visited the refugee camps, and there's no doubt about it. This is something that the community of nations should have taken care of years and years ago. We've literally sown the seeds of the present difficulty, not only our country, but all the countries involved. Generation after generation live in refugee camps and tents. The living conditions are deplorable. So I think we must share some of the blame along with other nations in the world for permitting this to go on for some 20 years.
A moment ago, you used the word hostage in reference to the Americans being held in Jordan. Yesterday, before a joint session of Congress, former astronaut Frank Borman painted a picture. He's just returned from around the world, and you have been involved with the prisoner problem in Vietnam, the hopes of prisoner exchange, release, and so forth. And Mr. Borman painted a very brutal picture of what has happened over there, contrary to what some would like to think here in this country. And he used the phrase also that the North Vietnamese are holding our prisoners in Vietnam as political hostages for bargaining at Paris. Would you concur?
There's no doubt about it. I think if we reflect on what Colonel Borman had to say, we recognize that some of these men have been prisoners 3, 4, and 5 years. They're really no military value. If they're repatriated, they'll never be any threat militarily. So why are they being held? In the first place, I agree with Colonel Borman. They're political hostages. They're the trump card that the enemy has in any negotiation. And some have been held as long as now almost 6 years. In addition, I think there has been mistreatment. There's no doubt about it. They haven't lived up to the Geneva Accords. They haven't permitted repatriation of the wounded or communication with the families. They just haven't done anything that you would expect from any country with reference to humane treatment of prisoners. And I would guess, as we've learned from Lieutenant Frischman and Major Rowe and Sergeant Hegdahl and others, they were treated badly. And I'm certain when we have a release of American prisoners, we're going to find the story repeated time after time after time. And this is bad for North Vietnam. They don't want the world opinion turned against them. And I believe this is a secondary reason they're holding the prisoners.
Senator Dole, you've stated many times in describing the role of a senator or of a congressman that a senator should not allow his affiliation with other groups and organizations to override his behavior in the Senate. But is it not a fact that persons get elected to the Senate because they do strongly identify with certain causes and certain groups, and this is the mandate that their people have given them in putting them there?
Right. I don't disagree with your statement. I think it may be in context with the so-called End the War Amendment group, where for the first time senators publicly raised over $500,000 to lobby their colleagues. I don't subscribe to this at all. But I do agree that we have an obligation to identify with people in our states and people outside our states. We have an obligation that extends beyond the borders of my state of Kansas. Yes, we have an obligation, a responsibility. This doesn't mean we become a delegate of this group or that group. We're a representative. And there's a broad difference between being a delegate for some special interest group in the Congress or being a representative of that group or of the people in your state.
Well, for example, I think when you were supporting one of the Farm Bill legislation pieces, you stated that it was a fact that people were migrating to the cities who were very poor, very uneducated, and so forth, and so consequently we should look at the farm problem and see if we could work there. But what kind of hope does this give to the people who are in fact trapped in the inner cities when we continually refuse to pass legislation which will help education, housing, and these sorts of things?
Well, I don't think we've refused to do that, but I think looking at it from the rural standpoint, take my state of Kansas, where we have an exodus year after year, North Dakota, where we have a decline of some 20-some percent of the farm population. There's a constant out-migration. What we need, one thing we need in America, is a rural development program which will keep the people on the farm and not complicate the problems in the cities, and perhaps even go further in attracting some people from the cities, whether it be the ghetto area, wherever it might be, from the inner city, back to rural America, because many people living in the cities originate in rural areas. We're not backward, we're progressive. We understand the needs of our nation, and we think perhaps that it's a great thing to live in some of the rural areas.
What about making land available to them? Is there such a thing as cheap, low-cost land?
Well, if we continue, there'd be very cheap, low-cost land. What's happening now, let's face it, is the land is being purchased by large landowners. There are fewer and fewer smaller farmers just can't make it. And when farm programs are phased out, as they may well be in another 2 or 3 years, there'll be more and more smaller farmers, and we'll have more corporate farms to deal with. And this is bad for agriculture. It's bad for our states. It's bad for America because only 6% of the people live on farms, but we still have the best food bargain in America of any country in the world. And I know agriculture in itself and farm legislation isn't very dramatic. It doesn't appeal to many people. It doesn't have the excitement of, say, Foreign Affairs Committee or Foreign Affairs Matters. But it's very important to America, not just the farmer, but to those who live in the cities.
What about all the federally owned lands? That's a sizable amount, isn't it?
Yes, I'm not certain how much, but some states, take Utah and Wyoming and states Colorado, a large portion is federally owned. We don't have much federally owned land in Kansas.
Would you advocate opening up federal lands?
Well, I'd advocate most anything that might attract people to rural America. We have the space, we have the schools, we have, we think, fair-minded people, willing and ready and willing and eager to accept people from other areas where it's crowded, where the living conditions are poor. But first we must find, in addition to agriculture pursuits, other job opportunities because farmers just can't make it on the farm anymore, all farmers.
I was wondering, Senator, before we break for commercial, maybe you can think about it when we talk about Vietnam and some other areas which you have talked about in what people call a militant way, and militant meaning that you are probably the staunchest supporter of the president's policy in Vietnam as we have in the Senate. So why don't we think about that?
Okay.
Come back.
Our guest is Senator Robert Dole, Republican of Kansas. We'll be back right after these words. Our guest is Senator Robert Dole, Republican of Kansas. His opponents in the senior chamber often refer to him as being one of the roughest floor men in Senate. They often sometimes say he's a cut-and-shoot man. I somehow don't get that impression sitting here talking with you, Senator.
I don't think we've done that, but you never know.
Let me try to draw.
Right.
If I can. Vice President of South Vietnam, Mr. Key, is coming to this country. You came out the other day and In effect, I got the feeling that you said, stay home, please stay home, don't come.
Right, I've said that almost daily. I can't believe that the Vice President of Vietnam, South Vietnam, has any real business coming to America on October 3 and joining a March for Victory. And I don't say the March for Victory people don't have a right to march. I don't agree with Dr. McIntyre. But after all, Vice President Key is the second highest ranking government official. Our country has made great sacrifices for his country. President Nixon's policy is one of disengagement. McIntyre's is one of total victory. I think it would be an affront to the president and would certainly do no service to our country or his for him to be here. Now, I'm not naive. I think Vice President Key has presidential ambitions. It may get him some mileage in Saigon to march with the militants, those who would say total military victory in Washington, D.C. But that isn't my point. My point is that we've made great sacrifices for the country of South Vietnam. And the least Vice President Key could do is to make a small political sacrifice at this time.
You don't
but
think
in turn, he says he all he wants to do is explain why South Vietnam is fighting.
Well, we've explained that quite often on the Senate floor, and we've done it without his assistance. But I really believe there may be some political byplay going on that this may be a good forum for Vice President Key.
Don't you think, Senator, that if the president's policy of disengagement happens, we are turning the South Vietnam over to Vice President Key and President Tu, that government? Don't you think that the American people should know what we're turning the country over to?
I think as soon as the last American's gone, that Key should come over and tell us how he's going to do it. But while we are still present there and we're still sacrificing young men. It's much like sending Vice President Agnew to Saigon to visit with the Buddhists, because they don't agree with Thu and Key. And that might be a good exchange, to send Agnew to Saigon on that day and have Key come over here. I'm certain they would resent that. They wouldn't want it to happen. And I think if Key reflects a while, he may decide not to come.
You brought up an interesting personality, Vice President Agnew.
Oh, Agnew, I've heard of him, yes.
I was wondering, and you truly are a president's man in the Senate and really have defended him very well on the floor.
Well, I've advocated his policies.
Yes, you have. And yes. I was wondering if at any time the Vice President has embarrassed you with what he has said around the country. Has he ever contradicted something that you've tried to put out by the president? In other words, there are always stories around going on that the vice president only enunciates what the president wants him to.
Right. Well, I was very active in the Church-Cooper debate. I voted for the Church-Cooper amendment.
In its final form.
In its final form. I understand the vice president indicated we were filibustering, and being a freshman, I didn't recognize that's what we were engaged in, but it did take 7 weeks. But I voted for it. The vice president, of course, says it was a mistake. I don't believe so, but I don't quarrel with that, with the vice president, because he disagrees with me. He disagrees with others, and
I was wondering. I was wondering. We're running out of time, but you lost your plaque this year, apparently, from the Conservative Organization for Constitutional Action. I can't remember the exact name of it.
Right.
I was wondering if you're now up for consideration for the Americans for Democratic Action on the liberal side of the aisle now.
I don't think I would ever qualify for one of those, but I have had fun with my conservative friends. I don't know whether labels really mean anything. I hope we never get in a category we can't move from and move out of from time to time, but I have a very liberal voting record in some areas in the field of civil rights, for example, and very conservative when it comes to economic matters. I vote to sustain presidential vetoes and things of this kind. But above all, I think basically I've been such a strong supporter of the president because he's getting us out of the war in South Vietnam. And I've had some experience in war and want to get out as badly as anyone.
I'm listening, Senator Dole, and of course I, you know, cannot question the sincerity at all of your statements, because I must admit that I admire your record, especially having been in the Senate for such a short time. A few moments ago, Murray asked you something about Mr. Agnew, and you responded in terms of a direct contact with a voting position you had taken. But with respect to many of the statements he's made regarding young people in the country, do you feel that this enhances the position of Mr. Nixon, which you see to be so vital to our country's survival?
Right. I think it enhances our possibilities of capturing the Senate. That's the name of the game this year in politics, is who will control the Senate come next year. We have a real opportunity, and I think this is Agnew's mission, to try to gain control of the Senate.
Now, at the expense of what?
At the expense of some of the liberals who are now occupying seats. But I must admit that I sometimes have to run to my dictionary to find out for certain just what Agnew said. But so it does keep us informed, and
but don't you think that you may win the Senate at the expense maybe of some bloodletting? And I don't mean political bloodletting, I mean physical bloodletting. There are people who say and accuse the vice president, as it happened the other day, of being a precursor of violence. They believe this.
Well, I don't see the vice president in that light. I see the vice president with a mission to sidetrack some of the liberals who now occupy positions of responsibility in the Senate. And I'm certain that the liberals are out trying to sidetrack conservatives, and I assume you could find statements made by both sides that would offend the sensibilities of some people. But I would guess and believe the vice president has been responsible 99 times out of 100 in the statements he's made. I don't agree with everything he says. He hasn't been in my state of Kansas. We'd very much like to have him come to Kansas. Other states, I understand Goodell can probably get along without him this year. But in any event, people sometimes are disturbed until the next morning after the fundraising rally. They start counting the money. And then they write off the trip as a great success, because he does appeal to many Americans, and I think may help us gain that magic number of 7. And that gain of 7 means that we'll have a whole new TV series next year in America. Instead of Fulbright, you'll have Aiken on television. That'd be an improvement.
With those words, Senator Dole, I thank you very much for joining us today on Panorama. Our guest, Senator Robert Dole, Republican from Kansas. We'll be back in just a moment and have some music for you right after these words.